everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on a somewhat shortened week, Thanksgiving week. We'll be doing live programs. Did one live yesterday, today, and then Wednesday. Then we take Thanksgiving and Black Friday as best of programs, previously aired programs, Tom Fairbanks, that we believe are worth a second listen. So,
absolutely. They're all worth a second listen.
Thank you very much. I'll tell you one thing that is not worth another day of is this wind. Oh, my goodness.
Seems like we have to take something along with the good in order to get the good.
There you go. And having some people over for the Thanksgiving potluck on Thursday, had the yard all cleaned up, of course, on Sunday. And then here we go with a big wind. But life in the desert, that's the way it goes. It's Tuesday, November 21st, 2023. In the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts, about 13 years of content, on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dennis Hoffman, Dr. Hoffman, director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University, where he is director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. Among his sponsored project efforts include construction and maintenance of the revenue forecasting model that is used by the Executive Budget Office of the State of Arizona and has been used since 1982. Professor Hoffman, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing well, but Americans don't think we're doing that well with the economy. Front page Associated Press piece today, and I'll just read the opening paragraph. Inflation has reached its lowest point in 2.5 years. The unemployment rate has stayed below 4% for the longest stretch since the 1960s, and the U.S. economy has repeatedly defied predictions of a coming recession. Yet, according to the polls and surveys, most Americans, Professor, hold a glum view of the economy. What's your take on all of this? Why do you think that is?
Well, the economy is an you've described the economy very well. It's accurate. It's noble. Things are good in the aggregate. I think that there's some folks that are struggling. I think younger people are struggling to get a home. They're struggling with bills. If they're renters, rent is going up. Gasoline has been stubbornly high. And so there's these little aggravations that I think that stick at people. But polling today, my goodness, I just think it's very difficult for people to respond to a poll, and I don't know if these are volunteer, unbiased responses, spontaneous responses, or the only responders are those people that log in and participate in polls.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, they've got an aggravation, they got a bone to pick, and they're going to talk about it. But I've said this, I think, repeatedly. The attitudes today, according to the pollsters, are worse than the attitudes in 1980 when the unemployment rate was 12% and the inflation rate was 16%. So there is a disconnect between what the economy actually is in the aggregate for most people and the responses from these polls. So, we'll just have to see. Folks are just not excited about what's going on in Washington. They're not excited about the potential candidates from either the Democratic or Republican parties at this point, at least according to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just have to see what unfolds there. But I'm quite amused. I saw one this morning about who's best positioned to, you know, to fix certain problems. And, some politicians approach these things thoughtfully and methodically and with good policy teams, and others don't seem to have a clue. And some of the loud ones that don't seem to have a clue are sometimes the most popular ones. It's a puzzle to me, Bill. Very much so.
All right. This is your last visit with us of the calendar year. We'll hope to book you perhaps the first Tuesday of the new year. But the reality, let's talk reality and not polls. What is the reality of the Arizona economy? The Arizona economy will go into the books here in a couple of weeks, 2023. And what's your verdict on it?
Well, it's a good year. We're sputtering a little toward the end. The employment report that was published last week was, one of the most dismal ones of the year. It shows that the economy is, in terms of the labor market, is weakening a little bit, but it's still growing. For the most part, things are good. I do worry about those little pockets where some of the most disadvantaged of our citizens reside. And, those folks that are in jobs that are easily eliminated, or jobs where they can't afford a home and they have to rent and they have to commute, those are tough for folks. And so we are seeing downward revisions from where we were, say, 3 to 6 months ago in terms of our prospects for 24 and 25. But half of the economists in this nation see recession. You're not talking to one of those. But it's possible, Bill. It's mm-hmm. certainly possible. We have to put it on the radar screen because interest rates are high, and they don't remember like you and I do back in the day when a 7-8% mortgage was kind of the norm.
Yeah.
But this seems really high to folks because they think 4 and 5 is the norm and 3 is good times. So it's tough.
So what do lawmakers need to think about in Arizona as we approach the session in January?
Well, my goodness, it's, money is at a premium in terms of revenues, and that's a direct result out of the concerted actions of lawmakers here in the last couple of years. Some of your listeners got rebate checks last week due to legislation that was passed in prior sessions. And, I'm not suggesting that, folks with dependents don't deserve rebate checks on their income tax. But, the rates are at the lowest in history. Our tax rates are at the lowest in history. And I know people don't want to hear that, but it's a fact. You can look it up. And that means that the revenue coffers are far from full.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legislature is going to have to pick and choose as to really what it's going to be able to do. It's not like last year when, they all got, what, $10 million to spend on anything they wanted. You get a car and you get a car. You get a car. So it's going to be a little leaner times, certainly this year. We'll have to see what they do with it.
What is that rainy day fund? Is it pretty much depleted at this point?
No, wait a minute. The rainy day fund is full. The rainy day fund is full, but folks are loath to touch that until, we're actually officially in a recession. What I'm talking about is the pace of ongoing regular revenues that is usually the basis for any kind of annual budget when we're when we're not in a recession. And so they're going to be, the belts will be tightened because of that, Bill, but not because the rainy day fund is empty. We have done a good job at filling that, and we haven't touched it yet. So, fortunately, we won't need to go to temporary taxation like we did in 11, 12, and 13 to, make up any shortfall. So at least that would be the hope. You know, once you open that rainy day fund, you go through it pretty quickly.
All right,
Professor. We haven't opened it yet.
Okay, Professor Dennis Hoffman, always a pleasure. Hope you and yours have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and then on to a great holiday season. And we'll try to get you on very early in the new year.
See you in the new year, and best to everybody in the Old Pueblo.
Thank you very much. Dennis Hoffman with us here as we kick off the Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk more about money with Shelley Fishman. The market's kind of a medium thumbs down. Shell is next. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday. But I do want to tell you that it is not too late to put in your order for your dinner rolls and your dessert at Mona's Danish Bakery. I know I, over the weekend, put in my order for 24 of the beautiful dinner rolls that they prepare. I'll be picking those up. Boy, is it going to be busy up at Mona's tomorrow, picking up pies. Steve told me that they're up to, at least Saturday, they had 500 orders for pies. Last year's record was 600. He was pretty confident that they, here in the last couple of days, that they will match or beat the 600 pie tally. So you can contribute to the tally by making the call to Mona's. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Shelley Fishman is next.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. And here he is, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shell, how are you?
I am well today, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing well as we get starting to think about the big meal on Thursday. But until then, a lot of people are thinking about, they're in a glum mood, as we heard Professor Hoffman articulate a few of the reasons he believes that many in are looking at the economy as is something that is just not right.
So to quote a song from The King and I, it's a puzzlement.
A puzzlement.
As you know, I've been very, very positive on the economy.
Yeah.
I think that all the statistics, as Dr. Hoffman has pointed out, are pointed in the right direction. We haven't had the much-feared recession, and it really looks like we're going to have what they call a soft landing. That said, there are a lot of people who believe that that these numbers are just not pertaining to them. So, you know, last week, in the middle of the week, on the electronic version of the Times, I picked up an article written by Karen Petrou, who's one of the financial analytics writers in the Times. And the headline was, "Bidenomics has a mortal enemy, and it isn't Trump." And what she is doing is, again, going back to recent polling that shows that for some bizarre reason, the majority of the American people believe that the Trump administration did a better job than the Biden administration in managing the economy. Now, the statistics would not, you know, bear that up. Nevertheless, you know, when people believe something and they believe it widely, and it's a widely held belief, it becomes its own truth. And so you can't escape. It doesn't matter what the economists are saying. If people firmly believe that the way the Democrats have been dealing with this economy has been less propitious for them.
Often referred to as the Biden economy.
As the Biden economy or Bidenomics is not working for people as well as what the Trump economy was doing, then that's a reality that you really have to deal with. Whether the facts back it up or not, it's up to, I believe, the Biden team and you know, our politicians to, number one, tell the truth, but number two, deal with these beliefs. And what's at the heart of some of these beliefs, Bill, is something you and I have been speaking about here on this show for a very long time. And that is the wealth inequality in the country. At this point, the most recent data show that the top 1% now own 31% of American wealth. The top 1% own 31% of American wealth. And that's more than the amount of wealth owned by the entire bottom 90%.
Wow.
So, you know, if I tell you that economy is doing fine, you know, your cost of your Thanksgiving meal this year will be less than last year, the price of gas is down 40 cents a gallon under what it was a year ago, you don't care. Because it's the price of turkey and fixings is still higher than what it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. That's the way inflation works. You can bring the rate of inflation down, but for the most part, when things go up, they come down very slowly, if at all. So, yes, if you're borrowing money or if your sense of the economy has to do with the cost of money and the things that go along with that, like rentals or buying a new home,
then it doesn't look very good to
you. Well, actually, the funny thing is that will come down because as interest rates come down, those rates will come down, which is one of the reasons why people aren't selling homes now, existing homes now, because they know if they wait long enough, we'll be back down at interest rates that are more in line with the mortgages they currently have. So the financial stuff, you can see when inflation comes down that those rates come down as well. The other stuff, however, doesn't. The cost of gasoline, the cost of bread, the cost of beef, the cost of the stuff that you spend money on every day, that will go up more slowly or maybe, you know, tad down a scotch. That's a financial term.
Just a scotch.
Just a scotch. But, you know, when I was a kid, the cost of a subway ride in New York was 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, I don't know what, $3, $4, $5. I have no idea. It's never getting to 15 cents again. Okay? You know, the cost of a pound of coffee, you know, used to be 40 or 50 cents. It ain't getting there again.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to measure what you experience on a daily basis against, has your income gone up?
Mm-hmm.
Have there been things that stimulated your income during the, you know, the period of the pandemic? And, you know, look at it in balance. But Bill, people don't look at it in balance. What they look at is what they experience every day when they go to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks troubling when, you know, their weekly groceries were $150 and now they're $200. And the fact that nobody can promise that it's ever coming back down to $200. Now, what we know on average is that wage growth has outpaced inflation at least in the past couple of months. But people don't see that. And some people don't experience it because it hasn't affected them. And so that's the political problem that Trump has. And that Biden has. But when I read this article, I thought to myself, we need policy fixes for the wealth inequality so that more and more of our, you know, people who are, you know, in the lower half of income earners in the country will experience the possibility, the hope, the prospect that they will get back into the middle class, that the middle class is not out of reach for them. And that's going to take policy decisions that I don't think we have the guts for.
I don't think so. Look at if lawmakers can get away from their fist fights.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got dysfunction in Congress. You know, one of the ways we have to fix things is to get more of GDP growth back into the general economy. Right now, it's sitting there, you know, in billionaires' pockets, literally sitting there in billionaires' pockets. Trickle-down doesn't work. Trickle-down never worked. It was exactly as George H.W. Bush called it in 1980 when it was introduced to him as voodoo economics.
Mm-hmm.
Things trickle up. And since 1980, they've trickled up more and more and more. And so all of the good growth, and we've had some pretty good growth, both by during Republican administrations and Democratic administrations. The growth during Democratic administrations has been better than the growth during Republican administrations. The recessions in the past 40 years have occurred during Republican administrations. Nobody wants to admit that because it's counterintuitive. Nevertheless, the basic tenets of Republican policymaking do work. They don't work as well as the basic tenets of Democratic policymaking in the economy, but they do work. But what we have done is we have taken all of the growth that has resulted from those policy decisions, and those policy decisions have mostly been in terms of lowering taxes and lowering regulations. And what we've done is we've starved the economy in terms of our infrastructure, forgetting that corporations depend on infrastructure and for the infrastructure to work, for their companies to work. And so what we have is policy decisions that have reduced, as Dr. Hoffman was talking about here in Arizona. That's not just in Arizona. That has happened across the board. And so when, you know, top interest rates or top tax rates go from 70 or 80% down to 27 or 28%, where does that money, you know, how do we replenish the coffers that need to be replenished in order to keep our economy going, in order to keep the stuff that we need, the bridges, the electrical grid, the education, all of the things that our economy depends on, we have starved out of the economy by lowering taxes. Now, you can argue about what the right number should be, but that's the problem, and people are feeling it. and they're blaming the incumbent. And you know what? That's something that we just have to deal honestly with. We can't say it's a mistake in the polls. It's real.
And Biden and the team have to do a lot better PR job right now.
They've got to articulate.
The message is just not getting there.
It's not getting through.
No, it isn't. It really isn't.
I don't envy anybody that job. I certainly don't envy Biden that job. He's got a lot on his plate, a couple of wars, and this has been horrible for him and his team. Nevertheless, we need to make sure that the American public understands the truth. Then they can make an informed decision.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Shelley. We will see you next Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Have a great one, Bill.
All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. A little bit of a mix-up today. We thought the mayor was coming today at 12:30, but actually we're told her visit is tomorrow. So I've asked Shelley to stay over for a few minutes and see what we can talk about. Shelley, let's pick up a little bit about, we were talking about policy decisions. None of that stuff's going to come easy.
Oh, none of that stuff is going to come easy at all. One of the problems we have here, Bill, is that the economic disparities have now become political disparities. People are looking at their perception of the economy and how they are affected, and they're drawing political conclusions about that. Yeah, you know, a good example of how it can go horribly wrong just happened in Argentina over the weekend, where a libertarian economist was able to get, I think it was 56% of the vote. And some of the things he's saying are pretty extreme for, you know, one of the largest countries in South America. But the things he's talking about doing, nobody would have even considered, you know, thinking about had the economy not gone wrong. Now, I tend to look at things through an economic lens, but Argentina has had over 100% inflation for the past year or so. You can't live that way. And so what people are doing is running to solutions that are promised to be panaceas, and they're not.
Yeah, is that that trend of populism around the world? We were in fact, we're going to bring your friend, my friend, Professor Millward, back on the show for our Monday one-on-one. I think we're going to do it the second Monday of the new year, talking about the populism that is going on around the world. You know, a lot of it started with Trump, and there have been kind of Trump wannabes, haven't there, all over the place?
Well,
Hungary and other places.
Yeah, you know, the wisdom, historical wisdom, used to be that when things start getting better, that's when they get worse. So that things for instance, inflation in post-World War I Germany started really improving, and the economy was getting better, and the recovery from World War I was taking place. That's when Hitler and the Nazi Party was able to get the attention of the German people around his message, which was, I can make it even faster. I can make it happen even faster. You see that in Hungary. Poland apparently has reversed that to a great extent now. Poland seemed to be moving in that direction, but they're moving back to a more, I'll call it liberal, but I don't mean it in the sense of liberal politics, but liberal democracy. We're having that problem here as well. People are, how can I say it? People are feeling that the economy is not working for them. And when the economy is not working for them, there's a gloom and doom that takes over. Mm-hmm. And so anybody who then articulates, I can fix this for you, I am, you know, the person,
I'm the strong
and the only
man,
person
I'm gonna fix
who can
it for
fix
it.
Yep. And anybody who gets in the way, whether it be Congress or the courts, or I'll just shove them out of the way and we'll go with my fix and it'll work.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thanks for doing a little bit extra for us today. Appreciate it.
Once again, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Want to talk a little bit about our favorite place to go for your poinsettias. That would be Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. And they had 21,000 poinsettias that they grew this year. And they're going fast because thousands of them are going to different groups around the area. So get over there and, well, I've got a couple for our Thanksgiving. It really does add a little bit of color, a little holiday cheer. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. Well, we did have a little mix-up today with the mayor's office. We thought the mayor was coming on the show today, but actually she's coming tomorrow at 12:30. But that presents a problem because I had originally scheduled for our pre-Thanksgiving Eve visit, our traditional visit with our faith and spirituality contributor, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And we've managed to track down Father Robert and bring him on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Hey, Father Robert, I guess this just fits right in with the kind of few days you've been having, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, Bill, I'm always just sitting around deep in prayer, and, you know, so it was only the slightest interruption to my deep meditation, so don't worry.
Oh, my goodness. What a couple of days you have had.
It's a bit like, you know, like those perfect Christmas things where we had our houses under construction and everyone in the house was sick, and we welcomed 10 guests in yesterday, and so it's been a little bit of a week, and then we had a big interfaith service at the church last night, and so needless to say, I'm ready for turkey and football games, put it that way.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about last night. We had Steve Councilman Kasacek on the show Friday, and he was actually a couple of times during the interview promoted this event, this multi, many different religious leaders were taking part. How did it go, Father Robert?
It went really well. I mean, I think everyone was there across political and religious and, you know, partisan differences, and they're really to encourage a kind of a restoration, or at least some kind of return to a civility and a respect for one another that is just necessary for a functioning democracy. And, you know, and from a faith leader point of view, it really came down to recapturing that sense of respect for one another across our differences. And so that came through loud and clear across traditions last night. And so it was really a really beautiful moment for our community to gather and to begin to pray as we go into this election year, because, you know, these times are incredibly tense. And faith communities are one of the few places left where people meet and gather across differences, and that they're bound together by something bigger than what they're fighting about.
Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, with us on the live line. I want to talk a little bit about one of the wonderful things that you instituted, Father Robert, at St. Philip's, is a daily, the daily bread, a message that different faith leaders at St. Philip's put out every morning, and it's kind of a neat way to start the morning. And I was looking at the one that you put out Sunday, and you were talking about we're approaching a thin place. I want you to talk a little bit about that with our listeners.
Sure. I mean, so the idea of sort of thin places, that if people have been to locations that are particularly sort of special to them, where they feel like the kind of boundary between this world and the next, however they think of that, it feels thin. And so for some people, that might be going to the mountains or the Grand Canyon. And for others, it might be, you know, going on a Celtic pilgrimage. And for others, it might be, you know, visiting Lourdes or something like that. But these places are the kind of places where that are kind of evocative and stir something in us, an awareness of deeper truths and realities. For some of us, that happens by going outside and just, you know, going far away out of our country or out of our normal routines. But then, you know, there are other ways that happens too. And I think in some ways the holidays present those moments, because we become aware of people we've lost in a way that is that reminds us of kind of, you know, the blessings we've had in our life, and kind of reminds us of what's most important to us. And so for me, the place that always feels like that for me is in Jerusalem, sort of being there and sort of being aware of the kind of, you know, the thinness of the boundary between this world and the next, and between history and tradition and all of that and our current reality. And so that's the kind of notion of a thin place. And so what I've been talking about lately is that for Christians, sort of we meet Jesus as that thin place between the sort of divine and the human. And that we walk with him it's sort of along a whole life's journey. That's a thin place if we're aware of it.
You wrote Sunday, we've domesticated Christmas a bit. Yeah. We've given Jesus Hallmark cheeks, but the reality is that Jesus arrived amidst all the messy busyness of the world to call us to a new life. I mean, think about, we think we're in a bad situation right now in the world, but look at the situation when Jesus came into the world.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the you know, Jesus doesn't show up because we're all perfect and just fine as we are. You know? And that's just the kind of reality of the story of the nativity, is that sort of God, you know, comes back into the world in this new way to try once again to sort of enter into covenant with us. And with the people who are sort of constantly disobedient. You know, this is the story of Scripture over and over again, is this kind of disobedience and turning away, and yet God's sort of unceasing, never-ending generosity and mercy sort of plays out in that moment. So the nativity becomes that thin place where the heaven and earth meet. And, you know, and when you think of the sort of radical nature of that, you know, we've turned it into you know, Hallmark movies and, you know, all this sort of stuff. but the sort of radical notion of that, that sort of God enters the world to upend death and to sort of change really the whole sort of cosmic order, because, you know, as we understand it, you know, God doesn't show up and walk with us, and dead people don't get up. You know what I mean? And yet the story that begins with the story on Christmas Eve is exactly that. God walks with us and brings with him new life. And so it's kind of the most radical reordering of our sense of the world. And yet I think it's much more convenient for us to sort of, you know, keep Jesus tucked away in a little creche rather than let him do much more than that.
And as I've been very transparent about Anne's loss with all of my radio listeners, mm-hmm. this is my first Thanksgiving without her after a half a century. And I'll tell you, it feels like chaos, and it feels like a very unsettled feeling. But when you think about it, Father Robert, we're supposed to have a very calming kind of a Thanksgiving and Christmas, but it's anything but that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it stirs up all kinds of stuff for all kinds of people. I mean, and that's the thing is that you know, as these holidays and, you know, special moments go on and on in our lives, they're layered with more and more loss. You know, that's the kind of the reality of it. You know, even for people who maybe haven't lost someone who has died, their kids have moved away and the house is newly quiet, and suddenly the holiday is totally different, and sort of what they bring to the table is not just maybe a meal just for themselves, you know, by themselves. What they bring with them is all these memories, right? They bring with them the memory of the people who aren't there around there with them. And you know, my sense of folks is that they approach that two ways. They either approach it giving thanks for the amazing times and relationships they've had, or they approach it with a certain kind of bitterness, and they let that set in. And, you know, ultimately that's up to us, right? I mean, that's sort of the choice, how we metabolize that grief and those losses is a kind of crucial choice for all of us to make in terms of what kind of life we're going to live moving forward. But it is chaotic. It's not, you know, we think, I always think of, you know, all those Christmas hymns are sort of, you know, talk about, oh, Jesus, no crying he makes, and it was softly and tenderly and all these sorts of things. But that's not how babies are born. You know what I mean? and it's just not the reality of our holidays. And so we've kind of created this mythology around what holidays are. But, you know, moments of real piercing, lasting, evocative beauty are rarely ones of just tranquility. They're things that stir something in us about our history, our future, our present. And all of that is, you know, deeply challenging, if we let it be deeply challenging, and challenging in the best way, the kind of way that makes us all grow as people, and to deepen our sense of thanks and gratitude, and that all of that is the kind of thing that makes life worth living, you know?
Well, I'm full of gratitude for you, Father Robert, especially today. I'm glad we were able to track you down. But I've got a few more minutes with you. We're going to take a break right here. Hang on the live line. We'll be back with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I am a proud member. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review.
Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition of this Thanksgiving week. Nice day over in Silver City, 55 degrees, mid-50s. Put on a sweater or perhaps a down vest and do some hiking. I think it looks pretty good for their upcoming Thanksgiving weekend over there. Good outdoor activity weather, and it's only about a three-hour drive. Many people off for the big four-day weekend, and if you, after you do the big turkey day, and maybe head over to Silver City, about a three-hour drive, not bad at all, and kind of a different environment for sure over in the Land of Enchantment. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org for information on things to do, and there are a lot of outdoor activities, great places to stay, and some really great New Mexican cuisine over in Silver City. All right, tomorrow we will have the mayor, Mayor Regina Romero, will be joining us in the 12:30 slot, and then in the noon slot, we've got the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. So we have the supervisors, head of the supervisors, and then the head of the city tomorrow. So busy day, Adelita Grijalva at noon, and then Mayor Romero at 12:30. But right now, our traditional Thanksgiving Eve visit with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills, was pushed up by a day. And we have him on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. So, Father Robert, Thanksgiving 2023. Thanks is the obvious word in Thanksgiving. So my question to you, how do we find gratitude every day and not just over the Thanksgiving holiday?
Yeah, I think it has to start with small things, and sort of reorienting our kind of sense of the world back to little things that sort of get lost in the shuffle. And so, by that I mean sort of being thankful, like we sort of you were just talking about on the radio, for the weather, for something as simple as the sort of blooming of flowers, and for birds in the air, and the kind of and I think a real sense of kind of of constant gratitude sort of begins with that ability to appreciate small things. I mean, the people in my life who I've known who have been the most at peace, the kind of people who just kind of evidence or kind of, exude a kind of sense of gratitude and gratefulness, are the people who were the most thankful for small things, a great tomato, a well-cooked loaf of bread. Those things just meant so much to them. Mm-hmm. And I always sort of, trying to figure out how do I capture that, right? How do I get that same sense of, and really what I think it is wisdom. I think that's kind of what folks cultivate over time, is this ability to be grateful for the smallest things in their life because they don't take them for granted. And I think that kind of ability to sort of focus on small things like that begins to ripple through the rest of our life and the way we appreciate bigger things and the way we I think that kind of gratitude changes our orientation of the world. It changes sort of what we're grateful for and what we consider important. You know, when you're grateful for small things, you know, other stuff kind of falls by the wayside in terms of how important or how pressing it seems. And then we begin to sort of make more room in our lives, our day-to-day life, our emotional life, our mental, spiritual life, for things that are important and not just things that are pressing, you know.
And they're in the scriptures, and this is sometimes read at the Thanksgiving service, which will be at 11, I believe, at St. Philip's on Thursday. It actually says in the scriptures, do not worry about anything. Am I not correct with that, Father Robert?
Yes. So there are several mentions in scripture, you know, either about not to worry or not to be afraid. I think there are 366 uses of the phrase "don't be afraid."
Wow.
In some way or another. I always jokingly say it's 365, one for every day of the year, and two for Stewardship Sunday when you're gathering pledges. You're going to be a little brave for that day. Don't be afraid. So the constant undercurrent of Scripture is to not be afraid, right, and to not worry, because you know, I think, you know, all of the kind of major religious traditions sort of, I think, understand at their heart that sort of that kind of anxiety sort of leads us to our worst places.
Yes.
You know, that kind of fear,
yes,
and worry and all of that. All of us, right?
Yep.
All of us are sort of taken to our darkest places when we let that kind of worry and anxiety take us over, when our kind of shadow side comes to the fore. So I think, you know, all the traditions know that to be at our best requires us to sort of be grateful, to be mindful of people around us, and to not worry so much about sort of, as they say, you know, what we'll eat or what we'll wear is what the passage in Scripture says, because, you know, look at the lilies of the field, you know, how they're gilded, right? Again, back to that appreciation for small things, sort of noting that you know, in all the cosmos, God put you here for some reason, right? And
yep,
to be grateful for that gift,
yep,
is, I think, at the heart of a well-lived life.
All right, Father Robert, thank you so much. I'm thankful for you, especially today. And
God bless you. God bless you, Bill.
A happy Thanksgiving. Everyone invited to come to St. Philip's 11 o'clock service for Thanksgiving. And then there'll be food, of course, afterwards.
Yep. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, we look forward having folks there.
Thank you very much, Father Robert.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Blessings this week, and blessings to everybody in your audience.
Thank you so much. On behalf of Father Robert and Tom, engineering and producing the show, it's a very thankful Bill Buckmaster saying, have a good afternoon.